February 11, 2021. It's a lot for Pedro's show.
Thank you.
for Pedro show. Happy Thursday. Maybe the second one of the month. Don't know for sure. I know Brother Matt's at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point because we're still in quarantine mode. But I'm not totally man alone because those engineers in Estonia with their righteous Skype software invention got Mr. Andrew Toy in Washington, D.C. talking to me.
Yes, yes. Boy. Thanks for having me.
Right. There you are. I got to tell people, we start off the show with John Coltrane, Up Against Wall, or Against, right? There ain't no A, there's apostrophe. So Up Against Wall. And then Noosa, Andrew Toy. Well, let's start with your journey. What's your earliest musical memory in your head, Brother Andrew?
Ah, geez. Earliest memory, probably like anybody with an older brother, it's hearing music from the next room and saying, hey, what's that? You know, because anybody that's older than you is automatically cooler than you if you're a kid. As just like a little 8 or 9 year old just playing drums for the first time and hearing, in my case, some classic rock or some thrash metal from the next room, it's like, wow, like that's intense. I need to get on board with that. That's kind of how it started, you know, just as a, you know, in my case, just kind of a bored young kid in Delaware, you know, and this was kind of like anybody else, this is the window into the world, or like this is kind of the introduction to what else is possible, you know, beyond just like our, you know, kind of little lives right there.
Well, yeah, I want to get into how you get started with music, but I'm always curious about your earliest musical recollection, because some people, they tell me they were hearing stuff inside their ma and shit.
Okay. Well, I can't claim that.
Yeah,
but,
me either, yeah. Big time. So, but that's why I asked this question, because it's all different paths we individually take to get to where we are now, right?
Right, and that's one of those, like, profound things I've heard is, like, that's the first, like, as a drummer or percussionist, the first polyrhythm you hear is your heartbeat against your mother's heartbeat, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're creating rhythms, you know, from the start, you know, the first time your ears open, you know, you're hearing different boom, boom, boom kind of things. So I don't know, maybe there's something to that. Maybe that's
I'm not trying to, like, say they're lying and shit. I'm just saying, in my case, I can't remember that shit.
Oh, no, I don't know if anybody can. But maybe there's some subconscious sort of, you know, effect. Who knows, you know?
Which what you did hit on, though, makes me think of something very fundamental, which is fucking rhythm. So that's a good thing. And you also told me where, in Delaware. Now, you also hinted at there was music going on, but it sounds like it was from, it wasn't being made. It was already recorded, like off records. Was there any instruments in this pad in Delaware?
There was not until I started to take an interest and, you know, kind of just like on a whim. You know, it's not a musical family I came from, but, you know, just kind of, you know, picking up the drums like in the school band, you know, just like, you know, like a lot of other kids when they're that age. But then, you know, from there, it just kind of taken off, like, you know, decided kind of early on, like, yeah, this is the only thing that kind of works for me. Like this, like drumming speaks to me.
You'd be surprised, Andrew, how many dudes... ladies too, were influenced by an older brother or sister that played.
Sure.
Also the record collection. Yeah. But right. I read over there at andrewtoy.net. 8 years old. So, 8 years old, you get into the what? Since there is nobody playing making music in your pad, and what's that, like second grade, first grade?
Okay. That would have been,
yeah, where did the interest come? Why didn't you get on the fucking licorice stick or the bass guitar?
Okay, because we all know drums and rhythm instruments are the coolest, right? So, you know, so I started, you know, fourth grade. I mean, honestly, because, you know, when I'm watching and listening to, you know, like Metallica or whoever, like at that time, I'm just focused, I'm fixated on the drummer. I mean, it's just so cool. They're behind this, like, mountain of noisemakers. So of course, like, you know, school band is not as hip as you know, Metallica, but that was sort of like my in. Especially,
oh,
like,
okay, it was cool.
I can sort of you know, just kind of learn the ropes and, you know, learn how to do this. So eventually I can build it up and, you know.
School introduced you, or you were watching videos, but I was going to ask you about school, if you were in the marching band or the choir, shit like that.
A little bit. I mean, mostly the jazz band. So I did that all throughout, any grade that offered it. Mostly jazz bands, a little bit of that marching and concert stuff here and there, some orchestra things, but mostly the jazz band, because that's the only chance, in an academic setting, at least in my case, that you could get on a drum set. And that was always my interest, is getting on the drum set.
All right, let me figure out the timeline.
Sure.
You didn't do jazz band in grade school, did you? When you were 8 years old?
No. So I started out in fourth grade, just playing, the snare drum and the triangle and stuff like that, all throughout until, I suppose, maybe ninth grade, maybe high school is when, they started offering, jazz band and drum set sort of things. So that's where it really, for me, started to sort of blossom, if you will. So playing in the school jazz bands, but then also meeting, older guys in my area and starting kind of like indie and sort of punk bands.
But I'm really curious, the first stuff, because the first stuff only happens once, right? So
right.
What about at home? When you're like that, like it says in AndrewToy.net, 8 years old, you got a trap set, like for Christmas, or like you paper route, you bought it with your own money, or what?
Yeah, I mean, more or less. So I think when I was maybe 10, my parents bought me a drum set from the local farmer's market. Just some beater kind of kit. But, like they knew I was into it. I wasn't doing sports or anything else. So that's... that was obviously like my thing that I wanted to do. So
where did you practice?
Parents' basement.
Wow. So they're bitching people.
Absolutely. They're so tolerant. Like now, like I can't like imagine like the patience they must have had, because I don't know how many hours. And then years down the road, like of course all the bands rehearse at the drummer's house. So God, they were saints just for putting up with it. But luckily, down the house now.
The basement turned into a prac pad.
Yeah, I mean that's it. Because it's the one with the most gear is the one that that's where the practices happen. Even now, like in my own place, yeah, it's the drummer's house that everybody kind of converges on.
Can I ask you, the first record you bought with your own money?
Yeah, that would have been, and it's one I still listen to this day, is Soundgarden, Super Unknown.
Yeah. And then the first gig you went and saw?
There's a lot of little ones here and there, but
that's
the
okay.
First, I would say, like big gig, like, at the local stadium, was Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, but it could be a little one. Do you remember your little one? First one?
That's really the first one. What was the first one?
Remember, it's a Wild for Pedro show, so there's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers.
nothing. No, I mean, maybe when I was like 7 or 8, I think we saw Weird Al Yankovic.
Okay, but that was probably a big pad too, right?
It was, and as a little guy, it's still like it's. There's still the spectacle of it, of like everybody's together and we're watching this band perform, even if it's not super hip. But yeah, I mean there's still
with me, I gotta tell you, where I am nowadays, music's music. Even if you're waiting for other people to write songs so you can make fun of them. Look, I want to play Andrew. I want to play this.
That's I think that's what it's all about.
I want to play this. Music you gave me from a project called Spaces.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. beautiful.
I'm
Watt from Pedro Show. Yeah, we heard Spaces with the tune called Interruptions, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we only got so much time. You're passionate about music. I love that, though. The RAF Irregulars with Chris Butler. After that, with Impeachment Day. Devil Hoof. This is Devin Hoff's little thing, Man Alone on his stand-up bass. Psychic Self-Defense is what he's been doing during COVID-19, doing a lot of prac, because music, people, some of us believe it's a lifeline in stressful situations. Thurston's got a new album. They did at home maybe a month ago. It's called The Walk. The song is. I can't remember what the record's called. Sorry, it's Thurston. Symphony Number 9. Now, this is a cat that goes back in Thurston's history, the Wharton Tears in New York City. He wrote this symphony, this piece, Symphony Number 9, his Number 9, Beyond. And this is a rough version. He wrote it for a symphony, but in the meantime, yeah, do everything on MIDI, right? Like, fuck it. The first movement, Deliberation, Wharton Tears. Beautiful guy. One time I got to record with Bob Quine. Steve Shelley was the drummer man.
Oh.
And it was Bobby Dylan, Vision of Johanna, Frieza. Okay. Hands Rotten. No, Just Joy, brand new from Joyful Noise. Bless Your Name. Jonathan from that label, cancer took him, fucked up. Beautiful guy, beautiful label. Support Joyful Noise, people. Hands Rotten from Switzerland, that shoegaze poser. Whatever that means. You know, Boris Brendan from the D.C. area. This might trip you out, Andrew.
Sure.
Starting in the late 70s, maybe recorded, I don't know, 5,000 songs and ended up doing 5 gigs. They're still together. Yeah, these guys are still making music and stuff.
Damn.
And this is a tune called Camera Obscura. Stolen Moments. It's both the name of the band and the tune, the live excerpt. And it's got a drummer man, Ed Wilcox, out of New York City. Great. He was on the show last month and great drummer man and beautiful stuff he taught me when we had our spiel. And then finally, some music you gave me. Lisa Said with Come and Go. Comes and Goes. Mm-hmm. Fucking that up. Okay, so let's get to this part, like after school. Not after school, but like in the moment. So you got your buddies and you got the basement band, obviously, not the garage band or bedroom, but basement, because that's where the prac band. Did you make bands with your buddies?
I did. And really, like, it was more the other way around. More like I would find a band because everybody wanted to find a drummer, and then became buddies. So, you know, music was sort of my way of making friends because, you know, that was like in throughout life. I mean, all my best friends have been a result of playing the drums. So that's something I'm always grateful for. So, you know, mostly
people, I know exactly what you're talking about. That was
– yeah.
That's what music was for me and D. Boone. It was a way of being together. I know exactly. It's hard to relate to people who haven't had that experience, though, because people think it's just a hustle to try to get money or girls. But sometimes it's to be with guys you like.
Right, right. And that's the common ground. And, yeah, I know you know it well. So, yeah, like, I you know, as, like, a younger guy, like, meeting these, you know, sometimes older guys out that wanted to play in bands, and, you know, they would sneak me into the bars because, you know, they'd be all of age and I'd be underage. You know, just to play, you know, just as much as possible. And, you know, growing up in Delaware, that meant going to Philly a lot. You know, just, you know, because that's where all the fun was. So, you know, it was just things like that. Yeah, just playing in just all kinds of different bands. And
before you go to the bars and stuff, and you're just doing the first band you had in that basement, did you guys start writing songs, or did you try? Because we when we first did music, we tried to learn songs off records. Did you do that?
Not a whole lot, to be honest. I think there might have been a couple, you know, clever covers thrown in. But yeah, I think like in my case, it was a bunch of you know, guys that were just kind of like dorks on their own instruments, and just like coming together and, you know, trying to like maybe just imitate their favorite bands, which in this case was a lot of like post-punk and kind of new wave things, and doing like their best sort of like interpretation of it, I guess, like their big, best sort of impression of it. But, you know, I think that's how a lot of times it starts. It's like you try to imitate something, and before you know it, you're doing your own thing.
What I was saying is, like, yeah, we were trying to imitate. We were actually trying to play their fucking songs. It was like building models, you know. But the other thing is, like you say, you're influenced. So, yeah, we're a Pixies band, but we're not playing Pixies songs. But
right.
Supposedly, Kurt said that about his Teen Spirit tune. Okay, when you write a book, you use a lot of words other people use, but it could still be an original book.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I was.
We
like
weren't doing that. Yes. We were trying to, because that was the way it was in the 70s. No one in Pedro here wrote their own songs and never thought of using music as expression. So that's why I asked that question, because so many people tell me in these spiels that they started writing their own material right away, and I love that.
I think, you know, it's a little bit of both, because I always think of it as, like, you know, if you're learning, you know, your native language for the first time as a child, you know, children learn by imitating their parents usually and whoever else. So, you know, they kind of like learn the ropes by just imitating and copying and whatever. But, you know, through years of, you know, practice, even though you don't think of it as practice, you start to come up with your own things. You know, you're using the same words. Everybody's, you know, using the same words.
You'd be surprised, but, man. The best guy in Pedro was the guy who could play Black Dog the best. That was just the way it was. It was a different value system.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
Technique over expression. Anyway, let's get back to your musical journey. What was your first gig with this basement band? Do you have a name?
So this band, and there was a string of bands, like,
first.
I was there, but the first one, yeah, it's a band called, To Althea from Prison. So it was named after a poem. Probably the first gig was, there was a cafe in Wilmington, Delaware. It's not there anymore. It was called the Wild Child Cafe. Great name and great spot, because it was one of the only, all ages venues, at that time. And they would just book anybody. So of course, as like a band that's, you know, younger and kind of a little bit out there, that's perfect. So I think like the first couple gigs I played was at the Wild Child Cafe. So it was like a vegan cafe by day and an all ages venue by night. So it was like the perfect setting.
That first gig, was it a success?
Yeah, like I mean, at least in my mind, we're like, you know, by the end of it, I was, you know, drenched in sweat and just like the, you know, sort of nervous excitement was just like through the roof. Cause I think I was 14 or 15. Yeah, like, I mean, that made it a success. Like, it really didn't matter. Nothing else really mattered. I mean, just like pouring your heart out, and doing the best you can. So yeah, in that sense, sure, it was a success.
Man, we had shit like, you know, you play Kegger here in Pedro, and if that guy knew the song you were playing, you know, Magic Carpet Ride or Born to Be Wild, he could take your guitar and play it better than you in front of everybody and shame your ass. So there's different experiences. That's why I ask these questions. What about after school? Do you go to college for music?
I went to college, but not for music. So I learned sort of a trade, computer programming, as a backup plan. Sure. That luckily I didn't need. So I figured, you know, if I had this backup plan, I'd be more willing to take risks, which I was.
I don't think that's I don't think that's a bad move at all.
Cool. Yeah, because I really wasn't interested. You know, I studied drums and had some teachers, and but you know, honestly, I learned more from playing in bands and going to shows than I did, you know, taking classes or, you know. So I had no interest in studying music in school. But you know, I learned a trade. But then as soon as I graduate, or like a couple weeks after I graduate from college, I started my first gig on working on cruise ships. So I did that for a couple years. And that was like sort of my introduction to like professional music way of life. So it was just kind of floating around for a few years, just playing drums. So that's kind of, there's been no real turning back since.
Let me think about Delaware. Rehoboth Beach, I've played. That dog. Rehoboth, that's the name of it. But I don't think there's any cruise ships.
No. Yeah.
It's a little peninsula, listeners, that if you want to take a shortcut to Chesapeake, as I've done it on several tours, Yeah, that beer, right? There's the actual place.
Yeah, the Dogfish Head is what you're thinking.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
Yeah, and they sort of rule the town. I mean, you know, that's like, you know, they have like a venue there. They opened up a few years ago. So they have their a brewery and, you know, they had that venue and a couple pubs and stuff like that. So, that's a big thing down that way, down Rehoboth, for sure.
We're at the end of the first hour, February 11, 2021 edition of Hot Pedro Show. Special guest, Andrew Toy. Hold tight for hour two. February 11, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. lot for Beaver. Shall we start off the second hour? Andrew Toy doing the Cemetery. Then Thumbscrew through an open window. Beneath the Ruins, Temple of Regret. And Manuel Maresca, Emmanuel Ferris. He's living in Berlin now, but he's a Terracina guy. And there's, I'm going to ruin the Italian language here, so forgive me. Scusi. A volta la vita è brutta, ma prima o poi arriva sempre il momento peggiore.
Sounds right to me.
Peggiore. Ore. Peggiore, that's it. Sure. My mom's people came from there, but I'm lame. Sorry. Hearsay with Ho Hugger Alt. This is from the Joshua Tree in the early 90s, old days, when there wasn't a lot of music coming out of there from young people. And then finally, Daytime Raccoon with Andrew Toy. From Andrew Toy, you, Brother Andrew.
And, that's me.
We got a lot here. Wash Bears, right? And you stay away, man. They got rabies. You don't want to bite them, but they are interesting. And they're
especially
pretty,
at daytime. You don't know.
Well, they're usually sick if they're on the daytime, right, because they hide. They're nighttime guys, and they're big. You know, I do morning hobbles by the waterfront, Pedro's in Harbor. And so at crack of dawn, it's the transition. So I do see, and man, you know there's a lot of garbage. There's huge raccoons because, right, that's what they're chowing. Okay, so cruise ships. Now, what was the connect?
That was just kind of on a whim. Just applied like almost like a sort of like, hey, wouldn't that be funny? Like, well, let me try it out. So, you know, I just kind of through the internet said, hey, how do I apply? Who do I talk to? And it worked. You know, they said, hey, like, tell us about you, send in some materials. I auditioned over the phone, you know, so that was like just totally on a whim, random, but it ended up being like just, I mean, such a good thing for somebody in their, you know, I think I was 22 when I started that, like that hadn't really spent much time outside of Delaware to suddenly be traveling the world, living on boats. So that was a good, I suppose, like a formative experience.
Now, probably not a lot of experimental music.
No, and that was really the downside, and why, you know, eventually, you know, I kind of I got everything that I was going to get out of it and stopped doing it. Because yeah, musically it's very square, you know, it's very kind of just like, you know, playing like the old American songbook and a lot of like standards and things like that. So it was good playing experience. I mean, for somebody just, you know, not having played a whole lot professionally, to just be on stage every night. And then on top of that, being able to travel around and, see different parts of the world. That was cool. But, you know, eventually it's like, okay, like, this has run its course, like, because you can't really have another life besides that, because, I mean, you're living on the boat. You can't really, like, have a side project or anything like that. So it's kind of all-encompassing. So I did that for 2.5 years. But, yeah, that was a good experience, again, you know, for somebody in their early 20s.
And talking about learning other people's songs, totally.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So after that, what happens for you? Music-wise.
Yeah, after that, musically, you know, I kind of almost like starting from scratch because, you know, I just spent so much time away. You know, I come back and, you know, I didn't really have any, like, connections. So that's where, you know, just kind of, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a drag because, you know, I didn't really, you know, have any, like, gigs or anything, like, waiting for me. So just started to kind of, like, scrounge around, like, you know, who needs a drummer, you know, kind of this, like, you know, survival sort of thing. And hitting up the Craigslist and things like that. So, you know, a lot of kind of, you know, meandering and stuff like that. Like, I felt a little bit lost. Hooked up with a couple bands in the process, though. Did some touring, especially, like, East Coast and through the Midwest, playing a few different things. You know, when one band was playing some funk, another band was playing some Irish music. So all these sort of things that, you know, came across, and it's like, okay, like, I don't know much. I haven't had much experience in these sorts of styles, but we know that, you know, genre is bullshit. You know, it's it's all music. It's all
well, you gave me some music here called Kitchen Noise. I want to play Hunting. Yeah. Hunting
sure.
Down.
Yeah. Thank you. さあ指先に向かって忘れる長い顔やからさえ濡れて踏み上げて助け様時間をかけてさあ指先に向かって忘れる長い顔やからさえ濡れて踏み上げて助け様時間をかけて
Watt for Pedro show. Start off that chunk of music with Kitchen Noise, Huntingtown. You know, we got Huntington Beach, so that's why I almost fucked up there.
I usually misread that, too. It's like, oh, yeah.
They had a war with Santa Cruz over who's surfing USA, who gets to, even though it was written by a Hawthorne band that ain't really on the beach about 10 miles away. Bang Lang, 1999 after that. Oh, yeah. My buddy Nez in Hokkaido, the big North Island in Japan, sent me a bunch of music from over there. So these next six bands are from Hokkaido. Bang Lang with 1999. Car Thief School with Abura. Chiyunokiki with Brown. Not Sunchilds with Pity. Frying Pan from Meat Cop. And then finally Slang with Zingy. And then we had Andrew Toy with Downstream. You know, you gave me some tunes here that are Andrew Toy. Did you ever have in your mind, Andrew, maybe not join somebody's band? Why did I fucking start my own band?
And that's exactly what happened. I think that's, you know, where a lot of people start to focus on their own things. You know, especially maybe us rhythm section people, because, you know, it's all about being that perfect sideman sometimes. It's like, you know, how can I serve, you know, whatever band wants to hire me? How can I make the talent shine? And that's cool. Like, I love doing that. I love just, like, backing up talent. And, of course, you know, that's something that I do a lot. But then eventually it's just like, okay, like, I'm tired of, like, waiting on other people or trying to fit somebody else and things like that. So then, yeah, it's like, you know, why not?
You know why I've heard that called, Andrew? Sideman-itis.
Okay. I like that better than
but
selfish.
But you know what? I think it's good to do some of that, though, because life is about taking turns. If you're going to ask somebody to take directions, shouldn't you yourself learn how to take direction? I think it's okay to do some of that. But I think if it's 100% sideman, yeah, some complexes start to develop.
Right, or just some sort of, like, I don't know, like, imposter syndrome.
Frustration.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, kind of one hand feeds the other. You know, just I'll kind of take something from whatever gig with other people, kind of throw that in the pot. But I'm doing my own thing. Of course, there's no other sort of parameters. There's nobody telling me or, you know, or it's not me trying to figure out what somebody else wants, you know, out of me. So, yeah, both ways are rewarding in their own ways. But, yeah, especially playing solo and especially in the past year, you know, it's been, like, pretty cool just to see what happens when it's just me, you know.
Yeah, because, well, just the mindset, right? Drummers, bassmen, what you call it, rhythm section, that's good word for it. They can't be leaders. They got to be supporters. And I think that's kind of weird. Right? Anybody can handle it if they got enough nerve.
Absolutely, yeah. And you're the proof of that, you know. It's like you don't need like a front man, of course, you know. Everybody can have their own sort of thing. And there's no rules that say, like, what sounds can and can't be on stage, you know. So it's just like, why not just make your own sound, you know, that kind of just all comes from maybe just the bass or just the drums. And it might end up being something completely different. And that could be a good thing. I think a lot of times that is a good thing because it's going to be different no matter what.
Well, at least you got to take personal responsibility, right? If it don't work, you can't blame other people.
That's it.
But what about that situation? You've been, God, they tried you out over the phone for the fucking boat gig. How did you try out dudes?
How do I try out people?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been done to you a bunch. So in turn, how do you do it to prospective prodmates?
I haven't had to do that yet.
Go ahead. You mean these Andrew Toy, this is you alone. Oh, okay.
Me alone. And then when I play live, it ends up being a pretty different than the recordings because I'm doing a lot of, like, I automate, like, looping and stuff like that. So not backing tracks or anything like that, but, you know, I kind of sample myself and mess with it on stage.
Okay,
you
know, but it's still a one-man show. Okay, I misunderstood. I'm sorry, Andrew. I think that's bitching. I think that's balls out and very, very, very bitching. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. February 11, 2021 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. February 11, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. Watch for Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Andrew Toy doing In the Clearing. Then Crane with The Grand Design. Dulcet Drone with Pisiog. Maybe Gaelic. Again, sorry for destroying languages, people. I don't mean it. Network Glass Al Balmore. This guy's incredible. His name's Dore. He does bitchin' sounds, you know, how he creates. But they're really rhythmic. I think it comes from editing, maybe. But OVT2. And then Paul Motion, a great drummer man, who led his own band, and Petra sang a bunch with him. If I Could Be With You, we lost him to cancer. And finally, Sins of Sam from Pigeon Kings. So, people, Watt fucked up and assumed, my pop used to say, when you do that, you make an ass out of you. And he said, that was not spelled that way on accident, boy. Anyway, when Andrew Toy went for his own music, it was man alone, okay? He didn't go and make another band with other members. He was the only member. So talk about that, Brother Andrew.
Sure, sure. So it's, you know, what started out as maybe just like a challenge, like a personal challenge or like a curiosity, like hey, like, could I actually put on a show with just the drum set and not have it be like too self-indulgent, but like maybe use like electronics or looping or things like that to make pieces that kind of stood on their own, just coming from drums and percussion and, you know, found percussion and just things that I hit on stage. So, you know, it kind of grew and grew and grew, you know, and the beauty of playing solo is you can kind of get to it whenever you're sort of the inspiration strikes you and, you know, whatever sort of mood you're in and whatever direction you want to take, there's no other people saying like, oh, let's keep it over here or like, oh, that's going a little too far in that direction. So it ends up being like very, you know, I mean, in one way, maybe self-indulgent, but in another way, maybe just like very true because, you know, I'm not trying to fit, you know, a bandmate's expectation or an audience expectation. I'm just trying to like make things that I think sound interesting. But yeah, it's all coming from the drums. I'm like automating like looping and effects and things like that. So when I play it live, all the sounds come from me hitting something on stage and then messing with that sound and like trying to like create these arrangements out of it. And yeah, and just playing solo, it's like if it goes good, you know, then, you know, it feels great because, you know, it's all you. If it goes bad, well, you know, at least you're not letting anybody else down, you know, so it's it is pretty liberating, even if it is sometimes a little like, you know, you miss other people and it's sometimes a little scary just to like do it totally solo, but it's cool, you know, it's fun just to see what happens.
Can I ask you about composition? Because, you know, Charlie Mingus was a bass man, but he composed on piano. He never composed on the bass. So I'm wondering about, for your Man Alone stuff, how do you come up, or is it improvised? How do you compose?
So it's a little bit of both. A lot of ways, I'm the form might be the thing that I do beforehand, but then the actual playing might be the improvised part. So in some ways, it would be like a jazz arranger that maybe comes up with a chord progression or just like a lead sheet or something like that. But then you give it to two different people, you're going to get two different results. Or, you know, in my case, I give it to myself on two different days and I get two different results. So the form might be something I kind of program beforehand with, you know, structures with looping, or maybe I have a general idea of like what instruments I want to play or, you know, what sounds I want to go for. But then like, in the moment, you're just improvising within that guardrails, you know, within those sort of parameters that you kind of set beforehand. So a lot of times it is, yeah, like I look at it as like making a like an outline or like a coloring book. And then what you do in the moment, that's where you're coloring in the lines. And, you know, sometimes that's very neat and very pretty. Other times maybe it's a little chaotic. It's a little outside the lines. But the structure, like the skeleton, is still the same at all times. So, to answer your question, like I guess kind of like a like in a jazz setting, like coming up with a progression.
Okay, or patterns, right?
Patterns, yeah, right, yeah,
and schema,
interlocking patterns, I guess, like for drums and like thinking about polyrhythms and
Let me ask you about that, because right, you can pile things up with sample loops or just multi-tracking. Now, you say live, you don't use backup tracks.
Right. Right. So, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, the danger of like looping and, you know, where sometimes it can get a little bit out of hand or whatever is just when you start just stacking and stacking and stacking. And then, you know, you just end up with like this big mess sometimes. So, you know, obviously that's something I try to avoid, and especially with drums, but, you know, other rhythm instruments, like, it's tempting to just like add and like fill up all the spaces. So, you know, that's something that I try, again, not to do and like leave space, even though it's an instrument that can maybe fill up a lot of space with a lot of notes. So, you know, using loopings and things like that in ways that still leave space. And then like having loops, you know, cut in and out at certain times and, you know, maybe going through a certain set of effects at certain times and things like that. So that it carves out some space for other improvisations. So that's where, you know, just the whole sort of tech sort of, you know, hashing things out.
Let me ask you this tech question. What about you firing off other sounds, right, samples,
mm-hmm.
with the drums? Like you could play the bass guitar via the drum set. Do you do shit like that?
Very sparingly. So, yeah, like, at least the way I approach it, I always like to start with, like, an acoustic sound. So what I'll do more often is take like the sound of the drums and then maybe pitch it up or down so that you do get like, I mean, you pitch the drums down, you get all these like kind of bassy kind of, sounds, pitch them up and you get all these like really like lead kind of sounding things. So I like it when like, you know, the sound starts from the drums and this is, you know, of course running it through effects and things like that. But yeah, like I like this idea of everything starting from the physical.
You're not so much into the sample. See, I was talking about like fire. Get this. You listen to that butt rock from the 80s? The drummers are firing drum samples.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing. You know, and as soon as you mentioned like electronic.
And you know how dated that sound is, especially that fucking gated snare, right? Tow, tow.
I'm not into that. It's like you've got like the real thing in front of you. Why are you hitting samples? Like, I mean, maybe that's old school or whatever, but that whole like kind of like blending of like electronic and acoustic, I think that's what's hip for me anyway. It's just like starting with something acoustic and then messing with it. I mean, then like, you know, once you've recorded it and played it and looped it or whatever, then mess with it. But, it feels to me like wrong to like hit like a rubber pad.
Yeah, it's like little tape recorders. You're just hitting the play buttons, right? The space bar on the crap top. Look, I want to play this Disaster Pendulum.
Yeah. We'll be right back.
One moment of truth makes up for a whole day of dishonesty. Making peace with blood. Humble tactics, how to get up, shaking from a stumble before the sun. Oh well, the change we go through. Oh well, the stains we leave on the cities. Angry, angry roads, brick with people rolling forward like onions. Before you in television pain.
Ground down.
Mental, it's fundamental.
And the cities, in the cities. And the cities,
mental,
in the cities.
It's fundamental.
Don't let me die at Coco's. Don't let me die at Coco's. Oh, nowhere monkey meets man, and the monkey is a machine.
Like an ape and an ape itself. I need to gamble for my health.
One number short on keto. Louis fast bordering Lido.
Words fail to heal.
Trump card rumbles.
And the highway home is pounded out by hand. Can you squeeze a little pain from the stone? You gotta hold on to your sense in a soul,
or someone will rip it out for you.
Someone will rip it out for you.
Like the purple wind comes in my window, and this is what it said.
Don't let me die of Coco's. Don't let me die of Coco's. Oh, nowhere monkey meets man, and the monkey is the machine.
Of chili yesterday.
A big pot of chili.
Good and aged by now. I'm bored and broke. I swap a bowl of chili for some 420.
A big pot, some 420. A big pot, some 420.
Come on over and eat my chili.
Smoke your weed. Play some tunes. Tell some jokes.
Age and race and looks are unimportant. Age and race. I'm serious about this. Also looking for a guy who'd like to get together now and then to drink coffee and hug. I'm not gay. Anything like that. I just enjoy a cup of Java with another guy in our underwear. Kind of a male bonding sipping thing.
A big pot, some 420. A big pot, a chili eating buddy. Age and race and looks are unimportant.
Age and race and looks are unimportant.
and looks are unimportant. Age and race and looks are unimportant. Age and race.
I'm serious about this. Also looking for a guy who'd like to get together now and then to drink coffee and hug. I am not gay.
Gay.
Or anything like
gay,
that.
Gay.
I just enjoy a cup of java with another guy in our underwear.
Last music for this edition, brought from Pedro Show, Disaster Pendulum, Andrew Toil. Off air, people were talking about Perk, drummer man, the Andrew Diggs, so do I. Ready to Fail. No, Ready to Fall, sorry. Live from Abrams, Damon, Graham, Mendoza. Eva Mendoza gave me this. Just some live improvised stuff that's very interesting. Stony Spring after that. Don't Let Me Die at Coco's. Yeah, not such a good band name, but a good tune. Veda Hill after that. Chili Eatin' Buddy. She did these tunes. It's interesting because you said Craigslist. That's where she makes these songs off fucking actual Craigslist ads. And then finally, Sneaking Suspicions, Andrew Toy. So I told people where they can find you on the internet, AndrewToy.net, people. But are you composing right now a new Andrew Toy album?
Right now, I mean, this. So now that, the album's out and came out last month, now I'm sort of reverse engineering it and trying to, like, build it more into the live show. So, you know, fingers crossed that stuff comes back this year. So now it's a way of, like, adapting it back, like those and maybe some other ideas into more of, like, the live show. So I'm ready for it, you know, whenever it happens, again. I did a live stream the other day from a venue in DC and it went pretty cool. So yeah, just getting ready for that. And then, yeah, in the meantime, like, you know, just starting, I'm always kind of like experimenting and, you know, whenever there's a cool idea, just hit record just to have it, you know, cause you never know when, you know, you want to like go back and kind of work it into something. So, yeah, it's an informal writing thing.
Reminded me, we got to get more and more music making people into recording themselves. Everybody can do it nowadays. And to have that ability at your pad, especially if a sitch like this comes off, why not? You know, it's like the old days when you needed a driver. No, we learned how to drive our own cars, right? I think that's going to have to happen. And I love what you're doing.
Thank you. And I think, you know, it's luckily it's happening more and more. And, you know, you see, like,
and, course, and the like, shit got more econo, like, right? The gear to do it got way more econo. It's not like the 70s or 80s.
Exactly. And they say, like, now, like, you know, $1,000 worth of computer and software is better than, you know, $500,000 studio 20 years ago.
Dude, we were paying sometimes $1,500 a day for one day in the studio up in Hollywood.
I believe it.
Can you believe that? Look, it's been a huge honor and big inspiration. I was asking about the next album. I know you just put one out, but when you get the next one out, will you come back on the show?
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Andrew. Keep on keeping on, please. People, it's been a February 11, 2021 edition of Wild Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.